We're in Exodus chapter 34 and about to begin with verse 21. We're in the second 40-day period that Moses spent up on Mount Sinai with God. Now, it started out with God doing a special reintroduction of himself, his name, his loving characteristic, his just characteristic. But then from there, during the period of time that Moses spends, apparently God goes back over many of the commandments, many of the instructions that he's already given. As I've mentioned, repetition is very helpful in education, in retention of information. And so that seems to be what's happening here, is a repetition of all the important things that Moses needs to teach the Israelis. So one of the first things he talked about was, you don't make images, you don't make deals with other gods and goddesses, or those that worship other gods and goddesses. You remember every year the anniversary of the Exodus and of the 7 days of unleavened bread. You remember also the redemption of the firstborn. Even animals who are firstborn have to be redeemed. And then he continues in verse 21 with other things related to the calendar. 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. In plowing time and in harvest time you shall rest. Now, the Sabbath was given as a special gift from God to the Israelis after they had spent generations working 7 days a week as slaves. They didn't get any time off. So God gives them a national day of rest, an enforced time where everybody is able to relax and not have to do any of the normal work that they would do. And it didn't even matter if it was a busy time like plowing time or a busy time like harvest time. The Israelis were still told, hey, that day is protected. No one should be working on it, not even your animals. Just chill, everyone. Every time I've brought this up, I've tried to share with you, while the Jewish Sabbath is not binding on Gentiles of the Christian era, the principle of needing to take a day off is still there. And so we need to uphold and practice that principle of taking time off. Verse number 22. You shall observe the feast of weeks, the first fruits of wheat harvest. This is the second mandatory festival. We saw this elsewhere. Every year, every adult Israeli male of reasonable health is supposed to come to the worship site at Feast of Passover and Unleavened Bread. That's at the beginning of the spring. They are also supposed to come at Pentecost, which here is referenced as the Feast of Weeks. It's 7 weeks plus one more day, 50 days. It always falls on a first day of the week because the 0 day of the count is the Sabbath that happens during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And so it's a second mandatory attendance festival at the place of worship. And then the next thing is the feast of ingathering at the year's end. Now, year's end, don't let that confuse you. It's the harvest year's end. So this is a reference to the feast of Sukkot, or as we know in English, tabernacles. It happens in the fall after the harvest has come in. And not just the grain harvest, but also the fruit harvest off the trees and also off the vines. So verse 3 or 23, three times in the year shall all your males appear before he who is God, the God of Israel. Now, if you imagine everybody, all the adult men, and many of them taking their families with them, if they all leave their homesteads, their towns, their villages, and they all travel to the central location, which was the tabernacle first, and the tabernacle started at Shechem, ends up at Shiloh, and then eventually the temple gets built at Jerusalem. So if you can imagine, all Israelis in mass, three times a year, going away from their properties to this place, the question might come up, well, who's going to be minding the store? Who's going to be taking care of security in all these places with all the Israelis gone? Well, God has an answer to that. Verse 24, for I will cast out nations before you and enlarge your borders. So I'm going to take care of giving you the larger country, which means that at some point it's going to take you 3 or 4 days to get to the worship site from your property. So you're going to be gone a week. It'll take you a half a week or maybe a little bit more to travel there, and then a half a week or so to come back. So 2 weeks for each one of these mandatory festivals, you're going to be away from home. So what happens security-wise? God says, no one shall covet your land when you go up to appear before he who is your God 3 times in the year. So God, in the original covenant offering, said, if you will just do as I'm telling you, I will bless you in such a way that when you make these 3 annual trips every year to the place of worship, no one's going to touch your stuff while you're gone. It'll be perfectly secure. Now, unfortunately, and I won't say it all the time, but I have to say it from time to time, the Israelis did not live up to their part of the covenant. And therefore, they lost some of the blessings that should have come from God's promises here. Verse number 25, you shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice with anything leavened, or let the sacrifice of the feast of Passover remain until the morning. So verse 25 seems to be rolling back to the feast of Passover and unleavened bread, and the reminder that there's not supposed to be any leaven involved in that festival, and you're also not supposed to have leftovers from the Passover meal. Anything you don't finish up on the night of Passover, you burn up. Verse 26, the best of the first fruits of your ground you shall bring to the house of he who is your God. That's tied in to the Feast of Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles, because the people would collect their tithe during the harvest times of barley and wheat and of their the fleece off of their sheep, the fruit off of their trees, the grapes off of their vines, maybe the wine that was produced from some of those grapes. So they would bring that tithe with them to the Feast of Tabernacles to be donated, to be devoted to God. So here, this is a reminder, it needs to be the best. Don't try to give God the junk. That's the whole book of Malachi, isn't it? Is you don't give God the junk, you give him the best. And then we finish this section exactly where we finished the earlier section with this strange little command, you shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk. And as I explained last time. This is the genesis. This is the reason for the keeping of dairy products and meat products separate in observant Jewish society, is because in the rabbinical wranglings on this topic, they couldn't be sure that an accident might not happen where the mingling of the milk and the meat might violate this passage. So they just simply keep two kitchens, they keep two different preparation materials, two different settings for the dinner table. And like I've said, when we go to Israel for our buffets, the morning buffet does have dairy on it, but it is only fish, not meat, that is also presented at breakfast. Supper time, not a smidgen of dairy anywhere. It's all meat, and then it'd be dairy substitutes like coconut cream oil and stuff like that. And it's very delicious. But I think that the point of this passage is to be kind. It's just kind of rude to take the poor little baby goat and cook it in its own mom's milk. That's just uncaring. It's unfeeling. And so God, I think, is trying to teach the Israelis, and by extension us, think about how what you're doing impacts on others. Be kind and compassionate. Don't be cold-hearted. Be sensitive in what you do. Verse 27, "He who is," said to Moses, "write these words, for in accordance with these words, I have made a covenant with you and with Israel." So some of the time of the 40 days is spent with Moses writing things out. And this is the genesis of the beginning of the book of Exodus, and why we can be sure that it is a good representation of what God said and did, because Moses is writing it down contemporary with it happening. Verse 28, "So he was there with He Who Is 40 days and 40 nights. He neither ate bread nor drank water." Now, this is new information here. We didn't know this. During this time period, God gave Moses supernatural sustenance. Now, you can fast 40 days. I wouldn't recommend it for a novice, but even advanced fasters, if they go 40 days, their body begins to eat up muscle mass. And so it's a very dangerous thing to do. But you can't go 40 days without water. It's impossible. I mean, 5 days at the outside and you'll be dead. Dehydrated beyond beyond survival. So this is supernatural. And then we are told at some point during this 40-day period, excuse me, "and he wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments." Now, the immediate pronoun before this pronoun is the pronoun "he" that relates to Moses. And that's why this passage confuses some people. The proper noun that precedes the "he" who wrote the tablets is "He Who Is," Lord. And that is exactly who wrote it. It wasn't Moses that wrote this second edition of the Ten Commandments. As we know from earlier, God said He was the one that was going to do it. And so this second edition of the autographed Ten Commandments written in God's hand will go into the Ark of the Covenant and will travel with them for the rest of the wilderness experience. And at some point, and we don't know when, they disappear. The rod that budded also disappears. The pot of manna disappears. Now, I've shared with you before, I believe that the book of Revelation reveals that the Ark of the Covenant, which also disappeared, is in heaven right now. It's in the heavenly sanctuary, and it will be coming back with Jesus, and I am convinced that Jesus will use it as his eternal throne. The pot of hidden manna is in God's possession because it's mentioned in one of the promises to the overcomers. To him who overcomes, I will give of the hidden manna. And so I'm looking forward to participating in that. I suspect, therefore, that Aaron's rod, Moses' rod also, and the Ten Commandments written in God's handwriting are also in heaven. That's my suspicion. I think they're probably sitting in the Ark of the Covenant as we speak, and we'll be back. And so I look forward to seeing all of those special holy items once we're in eternity. Verse 29. So we have now come to the end of the 40-day period. On the Jewish calendar, it's the 14th day of the sixth Jewish month. That would have been the 40th day of the second 40-day period. So Moses comes down probably on the 15th day of the sixth month. And so we are now the very beginning of September of the year of the Exodus. And something strange happens. Verse 29. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the testimony in his hand as he came down from the mountain. So he's probably very excited, very happy that everything's gone well. There's no partying with a golden calf out there in front of him. He is ready to let them know everything that God told him during the first and the second 40-day period. But there's something he doesn't know. It says, Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because he'd been talking with God. So that didn't happen during the first 40-day period. It did during the second. So God doing that pass-by and letting Moses see the afterglow, somehow that energy, that chavod, that's the Hebrew word for glory, all of that has soaked into Moses' skin, and it's radiating outward. It's actually probably the same mechanism that we see referenced with angels, such as the Christmas angels, when it said that the angels appear to the shepherds, that the glory of the Lord shone around them. So the angels soak up God's radiance, his glory, by being in his presence as his holy angels. And then when they pop into our world on rare occasions, they radiate that light of God. And Moses is doing the same thing right now. But he doesn't realize it. It says that Aaron and all the people of Israel saw Moses, and behold, the skin of his face shone. Now, his hands are probably also shining because, and probably his feet, the only skin that is kind of uncovered in Moses' attire would be his head, his hands, and his feet. The rest of it's being covered by robes and by material. So his face is the most prominent thing that's shining. And it says that they were afraid to come near him. And you even get the impression that they ran away because he's going to be calling them back in a moment. So the way I picture this in my mind is the closer and closer he gets to them, in his excitement to be back and to give them the law of God in written form, they have panic on their faces and they move away from him. They melt away and they're scared. And he's like, what in the world? What's going on here? Verse 31, so Moses called to them, and Aaron and all the leaders of the congregation returned to him. Notice the people don't come back. It's only apparently that 70 group that have the boldness, the bravery to come close to Moses. And it says Moses talked with them. And that's probably when he found out, Moses, you're glowing. You are shining with God's glory. That's why we were scared. And so afterward, all the people of Israel came near. So eventually, even they get closer to Moses because he probably explains, well, it's because I saw the glory of God. And he commanded them all that he who is had spoken with him on Mount Sinai. So he goes back over a lot of the stuff. He probably gives them a general overview to begin with, and then maybe details of more precise things that they need to know right now. But this is what we're told next, verse 33. Now when Moses had finished speaking with them, he put a veil over his face. So he decides to cover his shining face after this incident. And then he adopts this practice. Whenever Moses went in before he who is to speak with him. Now that's a reference to that tent that we were talking about earlier. The tent that's outside of the normal the main encampment, the tent where Joshua stays all the time, the tent where God meets with Moses daily. So whenever Moses went into that tent before he who is to speak with him, he would remove the veil because he's speaking to God. And so he doesn't want his face to be covered as he's speaking with God. Until he came out. And when he came out and told the people of Israel what was commanded, the people would see the face of Moses, that the skin of Moses' face was shining. And then Moses would put the veil over his face again until he went back in to speak with him. So here's the rule of, or the ritual, I guess we shall say, that Moses adopts. When he's speaking to God, he's unveiled. When he's speaking the word of God to the Israelites, he's unveiled. But the rest of the time, he veils his face. And this is all referenced in 2 Corinthians chapter 3. And I want you to go there as we're kind of closing up today, where the apostle is dealing with the idea that we are not dealing with the Ten Commandments anymore. We're not dealing with the laws on the stones that Moses brought down from the Mount Sinai. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, starting in verse number 2, he says, "You yourselves are our letter of recommendation, written on our hearts to be known and read by all. You show that you are a letter from Christ delivered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts." So that's the tie-in with the Old Testament story. And then he talks about how that we are ministers, this is verse 6, of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. So back to the idea that the Ten Commandments brought judgment on those that didn't live up to it. And sometimes that judgment was death. Verse 7. Now, if the ministry of death carved in letters on stone, that's the Ten Commandments, came with such glory that the Israelites could not gaze at Moses' face because of its glory, which was being brought to an end, will not the ministry of the Spirit have even more glory? So the Apostle Paul grabs a hold of this Old Testament story and says, look, the new covenant is so much better than the old. Yes, the old covenant had glory attached to it. In fact, Moses was glowing with the glory of God, and it scared the people. But we have the greater glory of Jesus in the new covenant. And so verse 12, since we have such a hope in Jesus, we are very bold. Not like Moses, who would put a veil over his face so that the Israelites might not gaze at the outcome of what was being brought to an end. That is, the old covenant, which was temporary. It had a purpose, but it was temporary. And so Moses was glowing with the glory attached to that old covenant. We have a new covenant, and we never veil our faces. Their hearts, their minds were hardened, for to this day, when they read, that is, Jewish people who don't believe, they read the Old Covenant, that same veil remains unlifted because only through Christ is it taken away. Yes, to this day, whenever Moses is read, a veil lies over their hearts. But when one turns to Jesus, to the Lord, that veil is removed. So we as Christians are always shining with God's glory because it is the glory of Jesus. It is the glory of the Savior. And we never, ever, ever put a veil over that. We always let the light of God shine through us into this dark world because those folks need Him.